Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
When it comes to investing, stand-up comedian Daniel Muggleton describes himself as the drunk heckler yelling at the stock market. I caught up with Daniel to talk about his experiences with money and lockdown. He finds a lot about money funny, and in turn, I found a lot funny from Daniel. I'll just start by asking you a bit about yourself, how you got into comedy, what got you to where you are now.
Sure. So I was a law student. I finished that because my parents were very determined that I should. They were like, you must finish. It's very important. And I did that. And then I started working as a pub trivia host / pub trivia organizer. And then that kind of somehow transitioned into comedy because I had another person who wanted to start this thing with me. It was Mug and Kettle Comedy. His name was Samuel Kettler. My name was Daniel Muggleton. Very clever. We did well there. And then, yeah, I kind of kept doing comedy and everything else kind of fell away.
And where are you based?
Sydney. Sydney?
Okay.
Sydney, do you want more specific? Stanmore. I'm not afraid. That's a very small suburb. If you're here, you might see me. I was in London for a couple of years, but I'm based back here now. I would like to be slightly more mobile, but it's not really the year for it.
Came back just in time for the lockdowns.
Yes, I flew into the bushfires, which quickly became the pandemic. So I was like, cool. Genius from me.
So what was your first job?
I think technically I don't think it counts because I didn't get paid. I worked a shift at Burwood Westfield Oporto's. Like a food court Oporto's, not even a standalone restaurant. And they never asked me, I never got called again. It was like the only time I've ever been ghosted in my life. Like it was like the shift didn't happen.
Wow.
Which is pretty hurtful for a young boy. And then I worked in a bottle shop once kind of school ended. I realized there's like a thread of alcoholism in all of my professions because it was bottle shop, bartender, pub trivia host, stand-up comedian. Like every single one takes place in a bar.
And do you think that will continue?
I can only hope so.
What's the best money advice you've ever received?
Hilariously, I was just on the phone with a mortgage kind of broker person because I have no idea. I'm very like, I had to be begged by many friends to get an accountant. Probably that, actually. I'll give that. And I'll give you their names because they deserve to be named. Jeff Drake and Samira Ali were begging me to have an accountant because they were like, how much do you earn? And I'm like, I couldn't tell you. And they're like, haven't you done tax? And I'm like, not for a bit, but nobody seems to have noticed. So I don't think it's a problem. And they were like, for the love of God, just get someone else. You're not going to do this. This is beyond you.
That's pretty good advice.
Yeah.
What's the best investment decision that you've made?
Well, this was made for me by my father. He's a wine guy. He likes wine. Have you heard of this? It can be quite expensive, wine. So he bought the original vintage of Penfolds Grange, 1951, which is the year he was born. And he bought that in my name as like a investment. And it was like, I think when he bought it, it was like $17,000. And I was like, oh my God, that's too much money. Cause I was like a teenager. I'm like, what the, come on. And then he just sold that recently for a significantly higher sum. I'm not going to say the amount, but a significantly higher sum. So it was the best investment I've ever made, but I had nothing to do with it. But the reason I love it is cause, actually, I shouldn't say that. There's a secret about the wine and I will not say it. Just in case.
Okay.
We'll so wipe that. Just cut it at the end of he made the investment for me.
What's the worst investment decision you've made?
Pursuing a career in the arts. It's horrific. Don't do it. Nobody wants to pay us. Like, people hate it. It's really bizarre. Like, people, like any other profession, people feel comfortable. People will pay $4.10 for a coffee, not even a large. That's just a regular coffee, no oat milk, $4.10. And they're like, that's acceptable. I'm like, hey, you want $15 to see me do an hour of comedy? And they're like, it's a ripoff. You suck. I'm going to Netflix. And I'm like, all right. I don't know. It's awful.
So would anything turn you back to going to law?
Absolutely not. That is horrific. No amount of money is worth feeling like that about yourself and the world. No lawyers deal with happy times. There's no lawyer to be like, hey, do you experience joy? Here's some paperwork. No, it's all the worst moments of your life. They're there telling you how to get through it. Awful.
When did you know that comedy was your thing?
When I ran out of options. I like doing it. I think that's it. I don't like doing anything else. Like, I work a lot as a comedian. Like, I work hard. I work long hours. I know this kind of defeats the myth of the drunk guy being on stage yelling at people, which I am also, but you know, I'm sober during the day and working, and like, it doesn't feel bad that I work this hard because I like the result. But that said, I do think, you know, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life was a lie to make people work more. You know what I mean? What happened in the back of the day? 9 to 5. It hits 5 o'clock. You chuck the pencil down. You go home. You forget about work. It's the dream. Now everyone's got a passion and they work until 8. We were tricked. We used to have a better life.
What's your persona, your comedy persona, would you say?
It's very close to who I actually am as a person. It's probably a little meaner, but like, I'm meaner to you if I like you more. So I think I treat the audience like I would my closer friends.
Well, I noticed you're not wearing a tracksuit today.
Well, I mean, you say that, but there's stripes on the other side. I'm tracksuited up frequently. Very good loungewear, very good lockdown wear. You can't fault that. But yeah, I don't know. I just try to be as honest as possible. That's it. I'm probably more honest on stage than off.
Would you say that hecklers are one of the most difficult aspects of being a comedian?
Absolutely not. I've never lost. Like, sometimes they're funny. I love it when a heckler's funny. Like, it's rare, but when it happens, it's beautiful. But no, they're not difficult. Like, they're generally drunk people trying to make something that's so clearly about me, about them. And as an only child, I relate to that, you know? It's just like, everything's about me. Didn't you hear?
See, now Galileo, I relate to that.
The earth revolves around me.
If you had $10,000, where would you invest it right now?
Look, apparently there's this cryptocurrency. It's kind of like this online currency that we invented initially for doing arms deals and buying marijuana. But now it's become quite lucrative. But I wouldn't know what to, this is the conversation I was having today. I don't know what to put it in. And I know that there's a lot of other people in the world who know better than me. So to put any money in anything, I'm going to be the schmuck. You know, I'm going to be the guy at the poker table who stinks. And I'm just going to be there like, is this a good move? And they're going to be like, yeah, it's really good, man. Ethereum, go for it, champion. I was thinking about buying Dogecoin. I'm an idiot. Like, I was like, oh, a meme currency. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, that's the thing. On the stage with a heckler, I'm in charge. And I know what's going on better than they do. Whereas with investment, I'm the heckler just drunkenly yelling at the stock market, being like, why am I poor? I don't want to be poor anymore.
So do you think you might give it to a professional?
Well, I don't know. Like, that's the thing about a professional. I'm very unconvinced. I think my mom gave her money to a professional and it's just kind of been there, like just around, you know, like I think it's, you know, it's gone up a little, it's gone down a little. And I'm like, I could do that. I could make it go up and down a little and basically end up with the same amount of money. I've heard there's these ETFs. I think I'm getting that right. I always called them EFTs, but that's FPOS, and I'm an idiot. But yeah, they're good because they diversify across like a thing, and lithium's real big. I do a lot of gigs for the mining community, and I constantly try to get them to give me insider knowledge, and they refuse to. They take it very seriously. I'm like, come on, tell me, cobalt, is it good?
What would you do if you only had $50 left in the bank?
I have had that in the UK previously. And you buy a train ticket to your next gig, you get a coffee and a sandwich and hope you get some drink vouchers while doing the gig. And then you wait for someone to pay your invoice and it always takes longer than it should. Why is the bigger the company, the longer it takes to pay me $200? You have a daily turnover of like $100,000 and you can't just slip me $200. Crazy.
It's the truth, isn't it? I remember having days in London and all I could afford on the way home was a can of soup. So
can of soup?
Yeah.
Oh, so you had a stovetop. Good for you. All right, that's living.
Do you intend to leave an inheritance?
Yeah, I think so. Like, because I'm an only child, so by default, I will be left an inheritance. And I think it'd just be a bit rude to dip into all of that, you know? Like, yeah, is that a thing? Like, does anyone actually answer that? Like, no, I'm going to spend all my money to the bitter end. Have you seen how old people live? They don't have expenses. Like, they're just chilling, eating tuna on bread. They're good.
There are people who don't want to spoil their children, who want to limit the amount of inheritance that their children get so they won't stop trying.
Right. That's interesting to imply that your children will only try if they need to. Like they have no capacity to just want to prove themselves in a world based on digital follow accounts. Like somehow the sense of achievement won't have been passed on to them.
There you go. Is there anything funny about money to you?
I think it's one thing, this is like a very comedy specific thing, but I am here as a comedian as opposed to a dollar bill. So I hope that's okay. I find it really funny when rich comedians pretend like they don't have money. Like it's somehow like on stage, they're like this poor person and then they like go in the jet to the next gig and you're like, what? Like everyone knows you're rich, dude. Like, I don't know who this is for. Whereas like I like the comedians who like lean into it. There's this guy out of Texas called Ron White and he like really is like, I'm loaded now. Like it's got like, you know, American, you know, Texas boy done good. And I'm like, yeah, great. Talk about the jet. I don't care. Just be funny.
Would you like to see any changes with the way people look at money post COVID?
I think everyone, I mean, not, geez, I shouldn't say everyone. But like, I think everyone's kind of settled down a bit in terms of like, buying stuff. I think I've noticed that across the board. Like everyone's just kind of like, we don't actually need much. All we need is to be able to go outside. That's all we really need. But yeah, I mean, you gotta hate that in a pandemic, unprecedented, worst year in human history, yada, 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 rich people got really, 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 really rich. Like rich people had enough time to accumulate enough wealth to spend it going to space where there is no pandemic. You know what I mean? Isn't that disgusting? Like that sucks. And like, yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah. What do you need $130 billion for? Why is there a billionaire hosting Saturday Night Live? And then everyone was surprised that he had zero charisma. Like, come on. Sorry.
Is now a good time for you to work on comedy, like in lockdown? Are the times that we've had in the last 2 years stimulating for creativity?
I don't think so. I think stand-up comedy is a live profession. Not that, you know, I've done heaps of work on Zoom. I've done Zoom gigs with some of my like comedy idols in America to like 1,000 people. It has been like one of the most positive experiences I've ever had. But in terms of like pure creative output, it's very difficult to do it in a vacuum. At least that's how I do comedy. Like I'm talking to people, I see how they respond, and we go from there. So like without being able to do that, you know, 5-6 nights a week, I'm a little bit stunted in what I can produce.
And your comedy seems to be very current, and you change it a lot. Like you're not having the same material. Is that right?
Yes. I do a completely new set every gig. You should come to all of them. No, that's not true. But yes, I do try to turn it over because, you know, I got new things to say.
Yeah. And do comedians hang out with other comedians?
All the time. That's what we do. And we talk about the same thing. Why are we poor? Nah, so it's not that. I don't know. Yeah, we do. We hang with each other a lot because we're available during the day. That's the bummer. In the UK, there's a lot more full-time comedians. So there's a lot more people to hang out with during the day. In Australia, because there's just less money in it here and there's less of a circuit. There's less of us. So I got to play tennis with the same guy every week. It blows. I want a second tennis buddy.
If you're bad, I could play. Do you work on other things other than comedy? Do you stand up comedy? Do you work on TV shows and writing gags? And
no, I'm pretty much 100% on stage. There's you know little bits and pieces here and there. Like you know, I help like. Some people like write for radio, like I got a friend who's got a business and sometimes I do some copywriting for him if he like wants someone, you know, if he wants me essentially. It's just like, hey, Dan, can you come up with some ideas for whatever? And I'm like, cool. But yeah, no, I'm very much a live guy. Like that's why I got into this. I didn't get into this to like be the host of the project. That seems rubbish. Like I'll talk to audiences live, please.
And so... what do you see as being your best result that you will get post COVID?
Best result?
Yeah.
My marriage continuing, that's pretty good. Neither parent dying, also great. Adidas bringing out a new color tracksuit because they've only got black and red on the Australian store and it's a disgrace. How can we only have two colors? Come on. It's a joke. Give me something.
How did you become
themed.
The tracksuit guy?
Pardon?
How did you become the tracksuit guy?
It was as a result of my British poverty, I would get the bus up and down the country to every gig. And I used to wear jeans. And I don't know if you ever wore jeans on a bus that cost £2.50 that you're on for 4 hours, but it's not pleasant. So I started wearing the tracksuit and I change at the gig. Then one time I was just like, I can't be bothered. So I just started wearing the bottoms. And then I was very lucky. And then I got to open, because I used to wear it off stage. In the UK all the time because it's like it's a very good temperature for the UK. It's a very good level of warmth for their like kind of perpetual cold. And I was wearing that and I met Jim Jefferies because my friend Amos Gill opens for him. And we hung out and then he was like, hey, do you want to open for me tomorrow? Which is really cool. We got to like Manchester Arena, which was like wild. And I got the tracksuit and he kept calling me tracksuit all night because we didn't get let into a bar because of the tracksuit. And then at the gig, I used to take the top off and only wear the bottoms. And he came up to me afterwards and he's like, why do you have a look until you get on stage? That's so strange. Like you're the only comedian who looks a certain way. Then on stage, you look like everybody else. And I'm like, okay. So then I just kept wearing the tracksuit. That's it.
Excellent. And what are you doing now for work? So are you getting paid for any Zoom gigs or anything?
Yeah. My regular kind of comedy night/club that I run with my friend Yasmin Kara. Well, she's the producer. We're doing a digital show every Friday. Mm-hmm. It's called The Running Joke Online. It's 8 p.m. AEST, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Oh, my God, have I learned about time zones this year? Yeah, so we're doing that every Friday. And then I've been fortunate enough to have some corporates get in touch to kind of put on bespoke shows for their companies because they're fans of The Running Joke, and that's been really nice. And then, yeah, Nowhere Comedy Club is like this U.S. thing. Where I still host shows kind of every other week. Yeah, so like I've managed to keep busy. Like I've been very fortunate in that throughout the pandemic last year, because of the tax thing and because there were forms involved, I didn't know how to get JobKeeper. So I had to make my income anyway. And I was lucky enough to do that on Zoom, basically, which is a pretty cool position to be in.
It is pretty cool. Well done. Mm. My digital editor at work said that the running joke has been the only thing to keep her sane during lockdown. So,
oh, that's so nice.
So who are your idols in the comedy world?
Big fans, probably Bill Burr, Patrice O'Neill. I think you got to like rate Dave Chappelle, just like you just love the way he goes about it. No one, you know, no one particularly unusual. All American. And all dudes. I'm sexist, I guess, in my taste. I can't help it. It's just who I enjoy. Yeah, but like, I don't know. You. I think you watch less as you kind of get deeper into your own career. You know, you watch it live. You tend not to watch like a special on Netflix. Say you wait till you see someone live because you kind of want to experience that thing, yeah. Which is different. Which is why, you know, Zoom comedy is cool because it's still live, even though there's a kind of barrier. Mm. But I got to work with Mike Birbiglia this year, who was like such a big deal to me when I started comedy. And I got to work with him a bunch. And now I got like his email and we're buddies. And I'm like, that's cool.
Wow. That's fun. So how long have you been doing comedy?
I think 8 years.
Yeah.
Like all up. Maybe it's getting close to 9, actually. Jeez. I'm old. Yeah, and but full time since I went to the UK, basically. That's mm-hmm. when it became like, you know, my job.
Did you go to the UK for it?
Yeah. As I said, like Australia's pretty small. Opportunities here are few and far between. And the UK just has this professional circuit that's existed for, you know, 30, 40 years mm-hmm. where you can make a living if you're not on television, basically. Whereas here, like, I think it's quite hard to be a full-time comedian outside of having a TV gig, a radio gig, a writing gig, or working cruise ships. And I'm not sure the old cruise audience is exactly my flavor, but I could be wrong.
Might like the tracksuit.
Yeah. They'll be like, man, this aerobics instructor is lost. All right.
Anyway, lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Dan.
Hey, my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to comedian Daniel Muggleton. Please remember to listen and subscribe to Friends with Money wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.